This is Bob, a.k.a. FFBJ, and you're listening to the only Never Win a Night podcast. Mate.
Someone get me a tankard. This is going to get good.
It's the Never Win a Night podcast.
The Never Win a Night podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, I'm Dave, a.k.a. Eat the Surf. Michelle? Jay? Trey?
Avast there, you scurvy dog. Captain Skunk here. Looking for Trey, Jay, and Michelle, are we? Their poor souls are being pickled in brine below.
Dude?
I am taking control of this vessel now.
Well, be there more room for one more in your crew?
Ah, grab your mic, me Jim lad, and let's set sail to the Nine Hells with episode 54 on the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
So, looks like this week they left me alone, and I enlisted the help. Did I enlist the help of Skunkeen? Skunkeen has dropped aboard to help run the ship. And welcome, Skunk.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone.
Thanks for dropping in, Skunk. Like I guess you could tell in the intro that Michelle, Jay, and Trey are, what'd you call them?
They're pickled in brine.
Pickled in brine. So thankfully, Skunk could come in and give me a little help. Actually, Michelle is...
Stop! Right there, stop! Okay, move along.
Anything this week? Let's see. I'd like to thank Teresa from Realms of Anacolia. She submitted a banner ad for us over at the vault. And you can see it at the front page. We'll have a link to it in our show notes. And I guess if you're using Firefox, at least when Trey was doing it, he had to click each one so that eventually it cycled through so he could see it. But it says, of course, the only Neverwinter Nights podcast. Have you seen that yet?
Yes, it's very fitting. It's straight to the point, being the one and the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
So do you see anything interesting in the Neverwinter Nights news this week?
Oh, yes. The CEP version 2.1 has been released. It requires the Neverwinter Nights 1.69 patch. That hasn't been released at this moment, but you can test it out with the beta patch and can start your building right now with it.
Cool.
Looking at the page, there's lots of new extra content that they added. The Darkness Over Daggerford content from Ossian Studios has been added.
So, Skunk, I saw you had some more of those DMFI events set up on the Neverwinter Connections, and I was a bit bummed because the times weren't right for me, but how'd those go?
Went all right. I ended up posting them up a little too soon. That made it quite difficult for some people to attend and sign up for. But my DMFI classes are going good.
Yeah,
I have a good lineup of great experienced Neverwinter Connections Dungeon Masters willing to share their knowledge with others. Just sign up at the Neverwinter Connections, and it'll be listed in it. It'll say DMFI Tools or DMFM. I'm also going to be running some sessions at some Persistent Worlds, which is quite a unique opportunity with PWs.
So your classes are going well then?
Yeah, I'm getting quite a bit of recognition for them. I just recently did a grand session with the recent monthly Hall of Fame Dungeon Master, Irk. He just won that award last month for his events. And the Moonsea Nomads PW server was nice enough to give me a temp DM password to give out so I could show others tips and tricks with the DMFI DM tools in-game.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's totally cool.
In May, I'll be co-running a DMFI session with Neverwinter Nights Connections DM Carvon. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's quite the experienced DM up on there.
Yeah.
And I'll be joining the great dungeon masters of a persistent world called Soul Journey, the Bloodstone Lands, for a picnic and some open DM training classes that anyone would be welcome to sign up to as soon as we schedule the times for those at Neverwinter Connections.
Well, through the magic of Skype, I was able to have a couple of lengthy conversations with FFBJ, a.k.a. Bob. Unfortunately, that same magic was unable to connect well enough to share those conversations. But the third time was a charm, so. FFBJ has been a prominent builder since the start of Neverwinter Nights and continues to build and help others in the community. Currently, he's working on a persistent world entitled Aurelian Nights. So sit back and enjoy. So FFBJ, a.k.a. Robert, do you go by Bob, or what do you like to...
I go by Bob, pretty much.
Okay, Bob. So, how would you like to introduce yourself to the community?
Well, I've been with Neverwinter Nights since it began, and been building since it began, and I've messed around with a lot of different things. I've done hack packs, done a few reskins, a lot of scripting, built a few areas, and 300 or 400 stuff like that.
That's a few.
Yeah, so, you know, my main interest has just been in trying to recreate or trying to create a kind of a unique experience for people that play in my worlds.
Right. So what role-playing game experience did you have before coming to Neverwinter Nights, and how has that served you?
Well, I was sort of like the second wave. A lot of the people I knew were playing with Dave Arneson, Mar Barker, who was the creator of Empire of the Petal Throne.
Right.
And they were really heavily into gaming, even scarily so. And I sort of moved into this house, this fraternity of gamers that was just like playing all kinds of games all the time. Talisman, Titan, God's Fire, all kinds of Kingmaker, Titan, you name it, board games. And there were a couple
I'll name it. How about Magic Realm?
Magic Realm. Hey, there you go. Magic Realm. And they were into games very heavily, and there were a couple of D&D campaigns. They even started with Chainmail. That was before I knew them. And then I dropped in, and probably after about 3 or 4 months of living there, I said, well, I'm going to make a campaign. And then ever since then, that's all I've done is pretty much DM and build and, you know, create conversations and, you know, play NPCs and all that, all the things you do when you're DMing. And that translated pretty well into the Neverwinter Nights building, because there you're creating on a different level. You're creating with the tool set that it's already created for you, and all you have to do is say, well, I'll put a building here, I'll put an NPC that has this conversation there, and I'll set up all these different things that for people to interact with. And what I found right away was I wanted to make it feel like what you did had an effect. And the idea of the persistent world was that idea, but my concept of persistent world was much different than what a lot of other people were saying. Would be like, well, a persistent world is where your actions have an effect. And they meant your physical actions, like, okay, we have a group of people and we go burn down this village. Well, that village is burned down now and will always be burned down until it gets rebuilt. Well, my concept was, well, if this world actually exists, there's armies in this world, they're going to have a lot more effect than a small group of role players or a party of people. There's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people in this world who are going around and farming and chopping down trees and building houses. So my idea was that you would have persistent relationships that you created. So, for instance, now in Aurelian Knights, my new persistent world, there's like 10 factions. And if you go around and make all these factions hate you, it's going to be really rough for you in that world. If you have 3 of them hate you, it's going to be a lot easier than having 9 of them hate you, for example. You know, and you saw that with Trey. When you were wandering around, the undead are blue to you. They're not going to attack you unless you attack them. But once you start attacking them, and if you do it on a consistent basis, they come to know you. It's like this, you know, subconscious connection. This is the one person that's been murdering our people, you know, so the goblins hate you, or the undead hate you, or various other groups, gangs in the town, you know, they're KOS to you. Kill on sight.
Right.
When they see you.
It really felt like I've told you before, and actually for our listeners.
A couple of times.
Yeah, we've tried to get this interview done a couple of times. We've had trouble with Skype and machines and things, and now we're getting it done, which is really cool. But, yeah, it was...
Thanks to Lisa.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle.
But shout out to Michelle.
Yeah, for saving the day. And, of course, surely something else will go wrong. Yeah, so when Trey and I are wandering around your Aurelian Knights, which, by the way, when do you think you'll have that that live for uploading?
I don't know. I had some people playing it last night, and I just really need to get some more lower-level content in there for people. And it's good to have a multiplayer group come in, because some things that are really obvious to me as a designer and a builder, you know, they just don't have a clue.
Right.
You know, where's the chateau? Well, it's this big building on top of the hill. I mean,
right.
Come on, it's right there. You know,
right. It's the area
but,
name. Oops.
Yeah.
I did the same thing. You know, it's like, actually, I think that was Trey was saying, I'm at the chateau, and I'm like, well, where's the chateau?
I did put in some hints, and I did put in some house rules. A couple of signs right at the beginning, so basically telling you, hey, this is the way things are here, you know. And I think that's good. It kind of cuts the immersion away, but I've got plenty of immersion, so
yes.
People will be very, very wet once they've played around a little bit.
Speaking of immersion, that's something I want to touch on a few times. And having from played your module for Entered into the World Design Contest, I told you that it felt like there was a DM there. How do you go about getting it to feel like there's a DM there? Is it scripting?
Yes, it's virtually all scripting. And the way I do it is, of course, different characters, you know, will have different scripts. It varies from the Barbarian Ranger, for example, in the Moaning Moors. He's kind of fading in and out.
Yeah, seems like he's going to be there to help us.
Yeah, he seems like he's there to help you. But he will help you if, you know, he brings some monsters back to where he is. But he isn't always where you expect him to be. And sometimes he just runs off on his own. And he is there to help player characters. Basically, the statues that damage undead if the undead come too close to them are there to help the players. It's like, this is a safe place, and once you step away from the safe place, sort of like the chateau area, is a safe place. And I had this idea I developed in Second God War where there were little islands of calm. in the sea of storms. And any time you moved from one island to the next, that's where you'd have the encounters. You know, if you went from this town to that town, on the road, or through the woods, into the wilderness, into the hinterland, that's where you would meet things. And that's where the action happens. And then when you get to the towns, or whatever, the citadels, the fortresses, then things calm down and there's not much going on there. But that's where you're safe. So that was the whole idea behind the Second God War, was that the evil gods were trying to make inroads into the human world. So anytime you had a graveyard, that's where the undead show up. That's pretty clear and pretty obvious.
Right.
And then Bokrug, the god of the sea, anytime you were near the ocean, weird things could happen there, because you're sort of like, he's this interface, and
you're in his realm.
Controls the interfaces.
Okay.
The interface between land and sea, that's where his power is, because he's the god of chaos. So that's kind of the, you know, the concept I was going for, was to make people feel like they're really not the hunters. They're really more like the hunted. And that's what I'm kind of going for in the Cerulean Knights, too, is that when you start out, you're basically allowed to go wherever you want, but any place you go, you could be in danger. You know, so, but you're an adventurer. That's what adventurers do. They go where places, you know, are dangerous. They go
right
to dangerous places. They do dangerous things. They, you know, they take chances.
Well, and you
had, and,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, you had touched on how you know, people wanted to have an effect on the world and persistent worlds, and you know, to me, that usually comes out in you know, a conversation or something like that in these solo games or whatever. But we've talked about how in your world, you've set up obviously the factions so that, you know, everything, it's not what you say, it's what you do, and I really like that. And I was, is a lot of that, is that all faction work, or is some of that work into your scripting, or can you elaborate on
that? Yeah, it's pretty much the scripting is based on Vindalus and his PRR, which is Persistent Reputation Reaction. And
they use that on Gallows Bird, is that right?
I don't think that's on Gallows Bird, but they had something similar.
Okay.
You'd have a reputation as a streetwalker, or you'd have a level of ability in certain things. This is more active than that. Where in theirs, you'd have the guard would look at the person kind of askance, you know, that they recognize them. Well, in mine, if you've got bad faction with the guards, they'll just attack you. They don't walk up to you and say, "Hey, we know who you are." They just, you know, basically attack you because you've done something, you've stolen something, you're known to be a bad person.
You're KOS.
For instance, you know, like the undead and the goblins, they're blue to you. You pointed out when you and Trey were playing, the zombies are roaming around and they're not attacking you. They're just doing zombie-like things, you know. And if you attack them, they're going to attack back. That's pretty obvious.
And but so will all their friends.
All their friends now turn red to you. If you go around smashing gravestones, they will attack you. If, for instance, if the goblins, if you go around insulting the goblins, it sends a message to you and says, you know, Eat to Surf has insulted the goblins in area so-and-so, and now the goblins, you know, lose faction with the goblins. So then eventually it gets to the point where all the time the goblins dislike you.
Well, and those goblins also mm-hmm. were, they didn't just come up and start whacking at you. Sometimes they'd run away.
Yep.
That was really cool. Can you elaborate on some of that?
Sure. Basically what I tried to do is make it everything, the primary objective of all living things is to continue to live. So it's kind of counterintuitive that a bunch of suicidal goblins would attack and just go down, you know, mow them down like your lawnmower in their grass. So what the goblins try to do is, well, they try to avoid being killed, even though you're probably going to kill them anyway. After a certain point, if they're badly wounded, they will run off, and they'll do a number of things. They'll either try to take a potion, or they'll go into stealth if they have stealth, or they'll run back towards the goblin totems, which is where other goblins can spawn. And they will not necessarily remove themselves entirely from the fight, because as soon as they've healed up or as soon as they feel they're a safe distance away from you, they'll switch back to a ranged weapon and start shooting you again. So you get to a situation where you have things running all over the place. And as a party, I've seen parties just completely scatter to the winds when they've gone into the situation, because there's a kind of a psychology that we have. I don't know if it's just human psychology or just game player psychology, but you want to kill that thing that's running away. Just like wolves will chase after something that's fleeing. That's naturally instinctual. Instinctually, they will do that.
Right. If you see a mountain lion, you don't turn and run, or it'll come after you.
Right. And so these things are running away from you. I'm going to get that little guy, you know. So you run after him, and somebody else is thinking and doing the same thing, and then other goblins running the other direction. So then people lose contact with each other, and that's when they are weak. As a whole, the group dynamic is strongest when the group is together. So if you can divide the group, not by anything that you did, but by what they're doing. They're doing it to themselves, you know. You should let that goblin go and concentrate on what's nearby.
Right. It's
but people don't do that.
Well, that's what's... I guess we've pulled this word out before. It feels really organic because, well, it's like you... I guess there's two ways to go about it, and I always pictured it as digital and analog, where digital, you decide everything that something... that a person can do, and you make a, you know, you script for it or whatever. But in your world, it sounds like you've kind of just designed it so anything that the players do, the monsters will, I hate to say the word think, but they'll react in a semi-intelligent manner that's based on the, I don't know. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, that's exactly what I've tried to do. And a lot of it's just, you know, trial and error and play testing. And the hard-coded thing about Neverwinter Nights is that if something is hostile to you, it's going to attack you. So what I had to do is I had to tell them, well, for a certain period of time, you're not going to attack. You're going to, you know, I make them uncommandable, which means they won't respond to any commands. And then I remove that uncommandability, and then they'll return to a situation where they're attacking you or they're doing some other action. Usually I'll have them, like, maybe four different actions they can do. That's, like, for example, the ranger. He'll go into stealth mode. He'll run to a random waypoint. I place random waypoints around the area where I also have monsters spawn. So monsters can spawn to these random waypoints, but they don't always spawn to the same one, and there's a list of monsters that can spawn, so they don't, the same monsters do not always spawn in the same place or same location. So it allows you to have an area that, while in general it feels the same, because, you know, there's always going to be goblins here, but they're not always in the same place. Sometimes they're on that side, or, you know, sometimes they're behind you, sometimes they're to the right or left. And then the other thing I've tried to do is focus on the emphasis on the skills that people have in a party, and that's why the role-playing aspect comes in. Role-play your rogue. You know, let the rogue go forward. Let the rogue scout the area in stealth mode to see what's around. and that's done through a spawning script I use, which checks your spot and listen, and will spawn monsters accordingly, depending on your level and the distance. It gives a distance depending on your level, so the higher level you are, the farther away these monsters, you notice them farther away.
So this, you just put that up on the vault just recently, right?
The random spawner, yeah, that's up there.
Right,
that's up there. That's up there with everything else pretty much that I've done.
I just remembered that coming up within the last few weeks, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
No, that's been there for a while.
Okay.
It's just you're probably responding to that one comment from Chargast about it being rock-solid scripting. And, you know, the thing is, I wouldn't call my scripting rock-solid by any means. But what it is it's a different approach. The normal approach is to just make monsters tougher and tougher. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to fight rats, you know. I've done that before, and I don't have any fun. I want to fight a certain... The whole point is to just get powerful and get more powerful. But in my view, what we're really doing in these games is we're fighting the same fight over and over and over again as we go up in levels. So instead of... At low levels, instead of just standing there and chopping up a bunch of skeletons, at higher levels, you're sitting there and chopping up a bunch of trolls. Like what you were saying, use it creatively. Go out and get the tree ant to join you in the fight against the trolls. You know, go out and get the guards to join you in the fight against. Use some creative thinking, and it's all about tactics. And to me, a lot of Neverwinter Nights is all about the fights. If the fights are boring, I just rather, you know.
Right. That's what why not play. We're talking about how most of us that have built tend to have not ever finished the original campaign. But it sounds like we had talked about this, and you'd done better than most on that.
Yeah, I'm not really proud of it. I didn't I didn't get all the way through any of it. I was like 60, 80, 90,
yeah.
I think, was the original and the two expansions.
So,
and the last one, it was really like I was forcing myself. And with Neverwinter Nights 2, I got, I don't know, to the first big town.
That's where I'm at. Actually, well, I'm in Neverwinter, I guess.
Yeah, and I can't remember where I was, but I was almost like, you know, I've seen this show before.
Right.
And if you ever played Gothic, I don't know if you ever played that.
No.
It's a great single-player game. It really is. You know, you can climb, you can leap, you can swim, all those things. Well, you can't do any of that in Neverwinter Nights. So,
well, you can with crap, but anyway.
Yeah, but what I tried to do with this is focus on the making the fights more interesting. That's the basic plan.
Yeah, well, and it is. Like you mentioned the rats, and it's like, I guess we've talked about how it's really first edition of you. Because,
yep.
I mean, we didn't... This sounds snobby. In the old days, we didn't have all those monsters. You know, there was
it was pretty basic.
You know,
it was pretty basic, and the thing is, I think, you know, at first level in Neverwinter Nights, you're nothing. So you start in mine, you start pretty close to third level, so you can actually take a punch. You know, you're not going
right.
to kill. You know, a plague of locusts isn't going to kill you, for instance. But
right.
You know, but the idea of combined arms, you know, every creature or most monsters in Neverwinter Nights, it's like they have a weakness. I used to hate this. You'd go into a world and there'd be this huge graveyard and these zombies, you know, are walking towards you. Well, once they get within 10 feet of you, you just run away and start shooting them again.
Right.
And to me, that was really boring. So I thought, well, one thing you can do with zombies is put them in a crypt where it's more tight, closed-in area. But the other thing you can do is you can give them companions, like rats. So when you hit the zombies, they call for rats. When you, you know, run into the Crowmaster, he's a zombie. but he'll go around to a dead zombie or a dead skeleton, and he'll summon crows. He'll call crows into that zombie. And then the crows are weak, but they're highly perceptive and they're fast. So then they fan out looking for you. And once they've discovered you, you know, then he starts wandering in your direction. And they can also blind you. They're kind of a distraction, but you can't totally ignore them.
Exactly.
For instance, the rats give disease. If they, you know, if you fail your save, you can get a disease from them. And the crows can blind you. Not a very good chance, but they can. So you really want to get rid of them. It just makes everything dark. You can't see.
That'd be cool.
They go for the idea is they go for your they attack your eyes.
Right.
You know, birds traditionally will attack your eyes. So they're mad crows. I have also had crazed falcons, insane eagles. You know, you get the idea here.
Yeah.
Normally, animals won't attack people. You know, bears will, but
unless they're rabid.
Most.
Or something.
Yeah, most animals won't. That's why I made them all crazed, because they're insane.
Right.
Because really, most creatures won't attack if they know they're going to die.
Well, and that links into why you have that your new spawn thing with based on your spot list and levels.
Right. So if you're a 20th level fighter who has no spot and listen, you're this huge tank smashing down the road, and you obviously you have no stealth. You have no move silently or hiding. So the creatures nearby that are there notice you're coming, and they just avoid you.
I said, heck with this.
Yeah, that's the idea. So you want to have a party, or you want to have a rogue fighter. You want to have somebody who's able to spot these various things and then decide whether or not to fight them.
Instead of just saying, okay, here's 500 experience points worth of stuff for somebody to walk into, they have to go earn it.
Yeah, it really does. It gives you the situation where you can be the hunter, you know, and you also can choose what you want to do. For instance, if you want to attack a goblin totem, you can do that and then summon some goblins as they respond to that. So you get to basically, you know, choose your fight to a certain point. I mix about three different spawning methods in. So you can never tell for sure what's going to spawn and how many. You know, what numbers they're going to spawn in, and additionally, what location. So most places you go in, and you know it's clear behind you. There's nothing behind you. Sometimes people will spawn things in behind you, but that's from a spawning trigger. People figure out where the triggers are, and then either they avoid them or they trigger them and then turn around and are ready for the monsters coming up from behind. But this one is more, like you said, more organic. You know, you never really can tell for sure where things are and where they're coming from. Like, earlier we were talking, and I talked about hearing a portcullis opening. Hey, something's coming. I don't know where it is. I don't know what it is, but I know that something just opened a portcullis, and it's coming.
And yeah, you were saying that was when you were designing it. So do you have a trigger to just set? I mean, like, I've just put a trigger, say, for the sound to fire off. But the way you've set it up is actually something is opening the portcullis.
Yeah, something from a different level of the dungeon has just emerged on, is that word, emerge again,
yeah,
onto your level. And you don't know what it is. I mean, you're in a crypt, so it's probably some kind of undead. But I want to give the players a feeling of uncertainty and nervousness.
Right.
Like you go across this one trigger, and it says, you feel uneasy.
Right.
Well, that's a spawn trigger. People know that's there, and they step across it, and you feel uneasy. But they don't know why they feel uneasy.
Right. It's funny that it's a spot. I mean, I went across and I was like, oh, it's a flavor trigger. You know, you're just giving me some flavor text. I didn't, you know, maybe I didn't see, you know, there's that little hitch when there's something spawns.
Right.
I didn't notice a hitch there. You know,
I also try to get away from all those little hitches that you get when you hit spawn triggers. You'll notice that a lot of my spawns, you don't get that at all.
Right.
Something will just show up. And the way I did that was I said, okay, something's going to spawn, but instead of having it spawn a group of creatures, what I did was I said select from a list and spawn 1 to 4 of these creatures. But it's just making copies of the same creature. So it's a lot easier on the CPU cycles.
Right, so it selects one and clones it.
Yeah, it selects one and makes as many copies of that one creature. So you don't get that hitch, you don't get that lag. And then the fact that it's on a list is you could hit, you know, you could get 5 different types of creatures from that same spawning mechanism, because what it's doing is it's resetting. It's saying, after a delay of 30 seconds, do this again,
right.
And then do it again. And then so you'll basically get these fights where you have 3 things to fight, and then during the fight,
get 3 more.
Maybe 3. Pardon me?
Can you get 3 more?
You maybe get from a different direction. Right. You'll get, because it looks at your character and then it says, uses your character as a base point, and then it says spawn in a radius around you a certain distance, which is also variable depending on your level. So what I made a little variation in there. So for instance, if you're like 3rd level, it would be 15 to 20 meters. If you're 10th level, it would be like 18 to 25 meters. So things will spawn in different locations, in different directions, and different distances from your character. And then, of course, if you're in the middle of a fight and they spawn nearby, they'll come and join the fight. So you don't get these fights that you have where, you know, you run into four trolls and that's it.
Right.
You know, that's we fight
well,
the four trolls.
Well, and plus, there's still all these things that are spawning in are acting organically, which, I mean, they're not just randomly running straight at you.
No, a lot of times they'll do something else.
That's to me what made it feel like there's a DM there, because it's not like I just, okay, first off, I'm not on just the quest to go get the thing to bring it back. And then I happen to have run across the trigger to start the 5 zombies that will come and attack me that I have to kill, that they'll get, you know, like you had said, this movie's been done before.
Right, and it's the same every time you do it.
But yours feels more like, hey, I've got my group together at the table, and we're going in to adventure. And I really dug feeling that.
That's what I'm trying to emulate, and really, it is effective, because it also is effective in the number of areas that you have to create. Because, you know, my last, the second God War had like 250 areas. Probably 20 of them were towns, or, you know. But you could go into an area one time, and during the day, for example, you could run through Western Zone, and nothing spawns, or very little. But if you go through that same area at night, totally different experience. Because I had a lot of things spawning at night. A lot of types of creatures are nocturnal, and humans are diurnal. So the nocturnal creatures, they hunt at night. And we are naturally at a disadvantage at night. So I try to get the feeling, when it starts getting dark, people would say, you know, in my world, hey, it's getting dark.
Maybe
and other people would
camp.
Go, you know, just kind of this chill runs up your spine. Well, maybe we should get back.
Right.
Because when it gets dark, it gets dangerous.
Which is funny, like I've always, maybe this is just my, we talk about this, my first edition or old school background. It's like, yeah, night comes out and I role play that I'm, ooh, it's night. But basically, in most places you go, it just means, okay, the Neverwinter Nights engine is switched from day music to night music.
That's pretty much the case.
Which
know.
Is, I mean, which is why maybe now when I'm, I guess I always, if I'm trying to be careful, I walk on the road thinking,
hoping, I guess, hoping that a designer is out there that will say, you know what, it's always scarier off the road.
Yeah, that's true. I have a friend of mine that does that exactly. You're pretty much safe on the road. If you get off the road, if that's where things bad start, that's where things start happening that are bad.
Yeah, and it's like I'm I guess as when I was like, oh cool, I'm gonna get to interview you, it's like I get to look up, you know, go play some of your stuff, but I have to admit that when I started, it's like, okay, I'm gonna have to go in and play some module that, you know,
yeah,
I mean, as another builder, you know, it's like that I'm not gonna want to go through it, and it's like, and actually, the first one I did was your world building competition one, and
mission
it just,
to Ascalon.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, instantly it was like, wow, this is cool, and I'm wondering.
Yeah,
I think I told
like
you about this before.
I kind of like the mourners.
Yeah.
The sister, you know, they're walking around the area in the first area you go in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're walking around. Did you notice the way they're walking around in kind of a circle?
Uh-huh.
Well, that was part of the... And sometimes what they'll do is... Sometimes
and I had read the
stop.
Fiction first, too.
What's that?
I had read your intro fiction first, too.
Oh, the fiction about the man.
Yeah.
Beware the Crow Master?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad you'd read that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they'll cry, you know, and the walking weeper's like that. She's an example of that. Sometimes they'll cry, and sometimes they'll walk over the gong and ring the gong. They're, you know, they're all hired mourners. So they're putting on this kind of this show. Like they used to hire people to mourn for the dead.
Yeah.
And that was the concept of that. And of course you had Mr. Small Print.
Right.
Being, so.
All the items. I mean, the attention to detail was just astounding, because it's like, I guess when I'm building and I always think, oh, I'm going to add, you know, what is description of it, and it's like, well, who right clicks on anything anymore? And then it's like, well, I guess I do, because I got to see all the little description jokes you had in there.
Yeah, and the thing about, for instance, the boots of leaping, when it's describing, you know, what they're made of rabbit's fur, they're lined with rabbit's fur, and they're made of deerskin lined with rabbit's fur. And the idea is the animistic magic. It's an old tradition.
Yeah, that's like from Gygax first edition, right?
Well, actually, it's
even
more like from the shamanistic world, you know, that the Gygax got it from.
Right, right.
That's a similar kind of thing. Is this creature has this particular ability? For instance, if you eat the heart of a lion, then you will have the strength of a lion. I don't recommend doing that, but that's where that kind of idea comes from. So if you take the various attributes of this creature that, you know, supposedly exists in its skin, then you can supplant them or transplant them into an item that humans can use. So that's where the boots of leaping, and then my favorite one was Rolling Thunder. It was the dwarven boots.
Right,
it
right.
Actually give you a minus 10 to move silently. And the concept behind that was, I explained it in the description of the item, that was that the dwarven king wanted it to sound like he had more dwarves running around on patrol than actually existed. And dwarves are pretty noisy anyway, so it makes them even noisier. And then I think I finished it up by saying the Rolling Thunder, the name of the boots, a company of dwarves charging across the rock-hard terrain in these boots is truly awe-inspiring. And it would be. It's like army of guys just come charging across. And that's, you know, the whole thing with the fighting, and it's about morale. It's about making people feel like things are going badly. You know, we've got to do something, or you know, I'm losing hit points, and you know, I've got more creatures coming in on me.
Right.
So I want to make people feel like, you know, they're in danger without necessarily overwhelming them.
It's very easy to miss
the art that you've done. Partly
it is
because
subtle.
We've played so many, you know, things that we're jaded on, and it's like, so when I, it's like, okay, and here I go in, and it's like, you know, I'm just going to go click, click, click type of thing. It's like, you can't go click, 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 but so many people probably do. What do you think about that? How they miss?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because you can only kind of point people in a direction. You can't make them play the way that the game, the world is designed to be played. It's something you really can't do. You can only put it out there, and then people will play it the way they play it. It's an acquired taste. It isn't necessarily something everybody's going to enjoy. It's what I enjoy doing, and if I enjoy playing in it, and if I enjoy the way things react and think, hey, this seems reasonable, and I've had, you know, I don't want to brag, but I've had more fun playing in my own world, just because of the fact that I don't necessarily know what's going to happen. You know, I'm always thinking, well, I know they can do this, 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 and this, but sometimes it surprises me, and I'm not prepared for it. But that's the part of it I really enjoy, is that I can be, you know, I can be surprised, or I don't know what is going to happen exactly the way I think it's going to happen. And that's what I think other people will enjoy too, is that fact that, you know, they can act a certain way and play a certain way, but it's not necessarily going to be the what they expected. You know?
Yeah, that's the what I was saying was analog, or we came up with organic. That's what also is good. It's how you've worked. I think, you know, all the different things, at least in what I've experienced through your work, is and we talked about it, persistence of vision, and how all the parts work together. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, yeah, sure. The idea of the persistence of vision idea was, basically I realized early on that we all tend to make little stories up about why things are working out the way they are. Why things happen the way they happen. So, I'll have, for instance, the Barbarian Rangers will say, I hear something, it come this way. And then, just after they say that, something shows up. Well, that just happened randomly. It didn't really mean that they heard something and it showed up. It meant that they said that, and it just so happened that there was a spawn that came in just after they said it. But it's like you think that, or you construct a story, well, they heard that, because even though you really know it didn't, but it's almost like that you get this kind of magical quality of possibility that occurs when stuff like that happens. So I think I told you the story of the escarpment of the Red Feather, where I heard a fight. There's a bear growling, and there's some guys yelling. So I'm like, oh, I can join in, and maybe I get the killing blow to get the XP for this bear, right? So I'm running towards the fight. I come around this corner, and there's a Red Feather warrior flanked by two Red Feather scouts, and at his feet, there's this bear laying there. And he kind of lifts up his hand and waves to me. It's like, it's almost like he's saying, take a picture, it'll last longer, or we killed the bear, too late, you know. It was almost like I was thinking, this is so real, you know, that this happened in this way. And I really get a kick out of that. That's happened a few times in mine. So that's the kind of feeling I'm going for.
Yeah,
you're a character in the world. You're part of the world, but you're not the only thing in the world. There's other things. For instance, last night when I was running Aurelian Knights, we were going to attack this goblin totem, and there's one other character. Where are you? Where are you? And we were on Skype, and he goes, oh, I'm watching Ruffy fight the Mad Crows, you know, because he was just watching the action. So
right,
I want
right.
people to feel like there's something going on, that they can actually just be a participant by observing. They don't have to be just you know, chopping things down all the time or whatever. There's a certain thing I also go for, and I don't call it monster ecology. You know, and the idea
wasn't that
being
in the old Dragon magazine, wasn't that?
Yeah, there's monster ecology. That's the concept that's been around for a long time, and the idea being that if you look in the real world, which of course most fantasy worlds don't really look at, but predators are few, and prey are many. But still, there's plenty of prey around, and you know, so the idea of the large monster, the huge monster, I tend to shy away from that. In fact, I only had, in Second God War, I only had like a couple of dragons. And they were, you know, deep down in the dungeon, and they didn't want to be bothered by people, you know. And
sure, they couldn't have enough sheep on the planet to take too many of them.
No, I only had a couple, and I, you know, I didn't have squads of trolls or anything like that. You know, there'd be a couple of wandering trolls around, and they did fine. And the reason they did okay was because what you do is you combine them with other things. You don't just have these single, solitary, large predators around. You have a combination, like in the trolls with troll swamp, I'd have these wasps that were flying around. Of course, they're a pain because they fly away if you wound them too much, and they sting you and poison you. And then the trolls are around too. So that combination, combined arms, is what I really go for. And the other thing is a technical reason that you don't want to have too many large monsters. They fill up the screen. You can't get as many of them. They'll actually get blocked much easier than smaller creatures. So you don't want to put large monsters. These are kind of technical things, but you don't want to put large monsters in a dungeon where they don't have a lot of room to move around. It's just true because there's certain places that large monsters are at a disadvantage. We talked earlier about zombies out in the middle of the graveyard. And how vulnerable they are there because they're so slow. Well, you don't want to put them in the middle of the
night. No one would be scared of zombies because it'd be like, oh, there they go again. Let's walk out of the way.
Yeah, and in my zombies, sometimes, you know, you hit them a couple of times and they'll kind of walk away from you. You know, they're not, obviously, aren't going to switch to a ranged weapon and hit you, but zombies are stupid. And as far as they're concerned, getting bashed by somebody's sword isn't really that all that pleasant, even though it doesn't hurt them right in the way that it would hurt
us. They still want to continue to exist.
They've lost interest once they've been hit of three or four times. Really
right.
Good.
That's a good idea.
But then I combine them with the rats, so while they're moving away from you, these rats are moving towards you. So, you kind of got this combination. It's like, I want to get that zombie that's moving away, but you can't get at it because these stupid rats are in the way. And then you have to kill them. And then, of course, the zombie decides, oh, maybe I will come back and attack him.
It's a tactical feel. There's actually somebody controlling the board somewhere. So it's like you've said before, they don't just come rushing at you. But it's more than that. It's more like someone else is deciding where the pieces are going to come to affect you, you know, the most.
Yeah, it randomly happens that they can be very, very effective sometime, even without futzing around with the AI. And there's some great AI scripts out there. Jaspery and Tony Kay did some great AIs. But what I decided to do was more look at the individual creature and try to get them to do things when they react as a whole. Now, when they're by themselves, a single goblin isn't going to be much of a challenge, you know, because he runs off and shoots at you. Well, you can just gun him down or run him down. But if you've got three or four goblins running different directions and shooting you from different locations, well, the problem is people want to just take a character with a big sword and just chop things up. And then, okay, now you go to the next one and chop that one down. Then you go to the next one and chop that down. Well, you can't do that in the way I've designed mine.
Exactly.
Because the one guy you're turning to chop down just ran off.
He said, I don't want to be chopped down.
Yeah, and he's run off. And some other one that you chopped earlier that ran off is now shooting arrows at you. And then you switch to your bow to take the guy down that's running away.
Well, except
and
they ran another different one, places, too. Yeah, so now I'm...
runs up and attacks you. So it's this combined arms effect that I'm going for. Yeah.
Well, and the goblins that I was fighting, one ran one way and one ran the other, so I'm getting shot at from two different directions.
They'll do that. They do that quite a bit.
That whole persistence of vision you're talking about, and the whole gestalt of the thing, I guess, is you're saying they're just totally, I mean, mostly random actions, and since all this stuff's going on, it that's the DM feel then.
That's exactly correct, yeah. And it feels like that. It feels like, I'd say probably about 60% of the time. Well, even 70% of the time, what they're doing is more effective than what the traditional standard monsters do. You know, sometimes it's not good because they'll switch to a bow or they'll, you know, right and shoot you so that you get an opportunity attack on them. But I can live with that because what I think is that they don't always do the smartest thing.
Sure.
Sometimes they do dumb things too, you know.
And maybe they panicked a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
But that's so that I guess it was really easy to role play in. I mean, there was no, okay, let me just get into here and ignore some of these things that I'm in a game. It was much easier to get into character and, you know, give any of those small mistakes the benefit of the doubt, and probably because there's so much of it, you know, the organic stuff going on, I guess. I hope a lot of people take the time and go through some of this without just marching straight on through, because I guess you could still take a tank and you know, never smelled the flowers, you know, and just go straight on past and never known what you missed because we're so goal-oriented. So
yeah,
I hope people
that
download from hearing this grab a party and go in.
Yeah, that was the idea. And my response, you know, to that is that it is a persistent world designed for a party. And you can take a single character in there, but you're not going to be nearly as effective as you would be in a party.
Well, or is fun. I mean, you hit it earlier that
either.
The whole thing is about having fun, and that's, I mean, that's on the, you know, first page of the white box edition or whatever.
Yeah, have
fun.
And the other, you know, using that as a template was, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to create, you know, whatever decisions you make, you know, you're kind of the final say-so. So when people say, This monster behaves this way, and this monster behaves. And I said, no, they don't. They behave any way I want them to behave.
Right, right. The DM is right.
That's kind of the way I feel about the design, whole idea of the design concept is. Now, I try to stick to certain rules that I've put on myself.
Well, sure, that gives the world consistency, which is.
And I really aim for consistency. I really, you know, aim for that. If they acted like this before, they'll continue to act like that. The only time it really changes is when you reach the level where you're just beyond them, totally beyond them. And then I'll actually have monsters freeze instead of just running away because they're paralyzed with fear.
I was wondering if you ever had any thoughts. You're designing persistent worlds. Releasing smaller parts.
I'm sure that half the people that downloaded Second Guide were took bits and pieces of it here and there for their own purposes. Because any of that, they can just open it up in the editor and look at any of the scripts. I had about 15 other scripts in there. I mentioned a few names. Vindalus, Sir Elric, Persistent Traps, and the flying, going on the dragon flight, and, you know, all that stuff. There was a bunch of stuff that I took from other authors and just used their scripts. And then the ASG persistent you know, database. The thing is, to get all that stuff to work together, that was a real challenge.
Right.
So All I can say is it's all there. If people want to take a look at it, they can take a look at it.
What's the hardest thing of building a persistent world?
I think the hardest thing is thinking of, well, the hardest thing is to do something for everybody. In other words, you know, we've got to create a mage's robe, a mage's staff, and weapons for bards, things, armors. And I think the rogues and scouts get a lot of short shrift, and I really think that they need, you know, beside the fact that, you know, they're the only ones that can unlock doors and things like that, they really need to have something that their scouting really matters. And that's where that spawn system idea came from. Totally about making rogues useful. And it does, I believe, that it makes them a valuable member of the party. And it makes people want to say, hey, let the rogue lead. Stop. Get back. Because then you'll spawn monsters. And that's what people really want, is to have monsters spawn.
Right. And actually, it might make somebody actually say, hey, I'll play a rogue.
Yeah, or a rogue fighter. You could, you know, you can still be a decent fighter and have some rogue abilities. Not all the rogue abilities, but yeah, rogues. They're really the adventuring class. You know, they're really integral to the party, and I wanted to make that point in this world, and that's what I tried to do with that. But you know, as far as the hard part, I would say it would be creating enough content for everyone. I had in my old one, I had mages' staffs that got more powerful as the mage got more powerful. So it would do d6 damage depending on the level of the mage, and only for the mage class. So if you had 3 classes of mage and 6 classes of fighter, it's only doing 3d6. But if you had 10 classes of mage, it's doing 10d6. So you obviously want to, you know, keep working on your mage's skill, but all the other things you have to make, and that's kind of why I started making individual items, where, you know, like the boots of leaping, or you, I think you guys got signet rings, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you get this, it's a blank signet ring, and then once you get it engraved, it's engraved with your name on it. It's your own personal ring. So that, you know, can it, later on you'll be able to get like a ruby or an emerald or a diamond or whatever implanted in that ring, which will individualize it even more, you know, for that particular character.
Right.
Gosh, I guess that's about it for the... But then, you know, the idea of you creating your own faction relationships, now that's where it could be a problem for a party, but that's the group dynamic.
Yeah.
So you get a group together, and 2 people in the group are friendly to this particular group. For instance, 2 people could be friendly to the Black Dagger, which is a gang. The 3rd person in the party might be inimical to them. You know, so they hate each other. So that's not good. So suddenly the person in, like you said, with Trey the other night, the zombies were attacking him, but they weren't attacking you.
Right, and I had no real desire to to have them attack me.
That's kind of an individual thing. You know, you have the certain monsters or creatures or groups that don't like certain people in your party, but you don't have a problem with them. So what are you going to do? Then it comes come to the decision of, well, do I want to fudge my faction with this group by attacking them? So it's an individual question, or do I want to leave them alone so that they won't hate me, and now my party will hate me for letting them get killed.
Right.
So that's kind of what I was going for with this, the faction relationships, being persistent, which is really the main feature of the world.
You're talking Second God World. How long has that been out?
Well, that's been out for like 4 years, I think, but I don't think anybody's using it anymore. For a while there was a group that was using it, and then of course the RPG people, they use it as their fallback default world to play in. So when they don't have anything else to play, they play in my Second God War.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it's like in 3 years they've only managed to get about a quarter of the way through it.
Yeah.
And then I guess one person said they'd gotten about halfway through it on their own, individually. So I was kind of impressed. There was one place that I was really proud of that probably nobody will even see, that was the Fortress of the Chaos Warriors. And within the Fortress of the Chaos Warriors, there are six Chaos Warriors during the day, and then there are six Chaos Warriors during the nighttime. And the six at night are undead types, and the six during the day are not undead types. They're, you know, Bokrugi and whatever. So Bokrug is the god of chaos. So around the fortress, there's like a dozen teleporters. And each time you teleport through one of them, it teleports you randomly to a location within the fortress. This is all outdoors.
That's
so
good.
What's
old
funny
school
about
map.
It is, what's that?
Good old school things to mess up map makers.
A party has a really difficult time staying together there.
Yeah.
But what can happen is you can teleport from place, and then you can see where you teleported from to orient yourself. You can say, oh, look, it's over there. I teleported from there, so now I'm over here. And the Chaos Warriors will use the teleporters too. So they'll be randomly teleporting around the area. And it's quite interesting. I did some fun things with teleporters in a couple of the higher level areas. One is in the Plains of Fire. When you come into the Plains of Fire, it teleports you to another teleporter, which is random. And it sort of ends up spitting you out someplace in the area. And if you had six people go in there, they could end up in six different parts of the area. So that's kind of fun. It's not something people would enjoy, but you can't keep a party together there very easily.
Well, it's fitting with the whole chaos setting. So,
yeah, that's exactly right.
You mentioned that. Yeah, the people have gone. Some people have gone through solo. What would you? And we've talked about parties and kind of the. I don't know. It seems like a loss of the old school adventuring party. What would you say an ideal party is?
Well, certainly a cleric. You always want to have somebody who can heal people up in the party, and somebody who could turn undead would be fairly useful. There's your cleric again. And, of course, a rogue. So you have a rogue and a cleric, and then a fighter. And the fourth one is kind of optional. People love mages just because they can buff other people up. And plus, when they get to medium and even in higher levels, they have those great blast back to the Stone Age spell. So, yeah, the traditional
fire is pretty cool.
Yeah, fire works good against zombies and stuff like that.
Well, it looks cool on the screen.
Yeah, so I think a traditional party would do fine. You can mix and match it a little bit. I think a druid would be good, too, for mine, because there are lots of friendly type of things to druids. You know, the druid religion or the druid outlook has some value. So yeah, I think a four person party traditional would be good. You could go as a two player, go as a rogue fighter or a rogue fighter cleric, combine classes. The only thing you can actually put on the ground and not lose is a trap. If you set a trap.
Right, because you can set traps.
You can set traps.
Right.
That's right. And that's very useful. Another thing that rogues can do, setting traps. That goes back to the idea the player is a character in the world, not the focus of the world. Gently get the people into the world, because, you know, it can be brutal right away.
Right.
Just a few places right out, and people say, well, geez, just right outside of this area, I get crushed. You know, and people don't like that, but I want to make them feel like
That's the new school player.
Yeah,
they just ran out.
I remember so many times when I was in Second God Wars, you know, it's kind of a DM, and people would show up and they'd immediately run down the hill and get killed. And it's like, well, there's signs all over the place telling you to go to the way in and talk to so-and-so, and he gives you items, he gives you, you know, some letters, and you can join your factions, and, you know, you come out the door and you're like second level, and with 4,000 gold, and you can buy some great decent equipment to get started, well, and those people die. So what's going to happen to a first-level character who runs down the hill right. into the bandits? There's a big sign, warning, bandits on the road, the Mad Ratter is spouting out stuff all over the place. Deaths of adventurers rise sharply, bandits on the road south, pirates on the river, you know. It's crazy, and people just they just ignore it, run down the hill and get killed.
Yeah.
So, it for me is like, you know, you've been an old-time gamer, so you know what it's like. It's like you want to have something that's different and unique and not just the same old, and that's what I think I've really really focused on and really tried to achieve.
I think you've done
and that's what I'm trying to do. Well, you could always take Second God War and take a look at that.
Yeah.
That's more complete.
I think that's what we should have. I still think we should have something in our forums that has a contest to who gets the farthest in Second God War. But
oh, well, that's, you know, it's something that, you know, it's not finished, so it's
well,
kind
is,
of like
is anything ever finished?
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of like an unfinished masterpiece. But there's like 25th level, 25 levels of content. And, you know, you really get the idea of what I was trying to go for with that. Now, if you took a 40th level character, you could just wipe through the world. But what's the point in doing that?
Yeah.
I'm sure some people have done that. But
yeah, I just don't get that style of play. But, you know,
sure. No, there's no fun at all to that. The thing about Second God War is it has to be played on a server. So it just what you do is you just start server EXE, and then once you start that, you have to put it up on GameSpy and play it.
Right.
Because you can't save your progress.
Right.
You can't save it because at some point in the 3.5 to 4 years I was creating it, something got messed up. And it still plays just fine, but when you try to save it, it can't. It was something to do with the CEP or something. It can't find it. It can't recreate the world. So you have to go on the server. But then everything's persistent. So your factions persist, and your characters persist. Your characters, you know, got his big file, so they're still there. So that's the way you can play it. That's one reason it hasn't gotten as much play. Yeah, I'm working on this, and it's coming along, and I'm having a lot of fun with it, and I think the people that have played in it are enjoying it.
So it looks like this third time's the charm at getting this interview actually recorded. And
okay.
And
great.
I think it was a good conversation. Anything you want to say to the community before we go?
Not really. Oh, I guess I could say that, well, it's really great that there are people out there that appreciate, you know, what we do. That, you know, you appreciated it, and I have a few other people that I know that get a kick out of it. If it wasn't for them, if it wasn't for people like you, then there wouldn't be much point in doing it. So I guess that's a wrap for that.
That's cool. Thanks. Appreciate that. So before we go, why don't you tell the listeners, tell them what to check out so they can experience this organic building that you've done.
Okay. Well, you can go to the vault and type in FFBJ, and it'll show you everything I've done. Mission to Ascalon was the module I did for the competition, which lost. But you can get a fairly good idea like Dave did. By going through that, and it's painless because it's probably only take you about 45 minutes to an hour to play through it. Or you can be very adventurous and get Second God War and take a look at that. So that's kind of the epic type of world. And there's a bunch of other stuff I did, the horse demo, just for riding around on horses, and the random spawn demo. Most of the things I do are in demos. And then I'm working on, the new one I'm working on is called Aurelian Knights. So look for it soon in a vault near you.
In a vault near you, I was going to say that. Excellent. Well, thanks for putting up with these attempts to get this recorded. And
hey, that's okay. Thanks for putting up with me.
Hey, no worries. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
That was great.
And we're back. And Skunk is still with me.
Hi.
Actually, Skunk's been nice enough to be chatting with me as my recorder went down and things have been, I guess chaos has reigned.
Yeah, he's being too nice. I kind of barged in here rudely and waved a sword around. And
put the rest of my co-hosts in brine.
Yeah, and I had to force a couple of ales down his throat to get him in the mood for this.
Arrgh!
Always respected FFBJ. He's a great asset to the No Winter Nights community. He's part of the Builders Project that I've been a member of for years, and he's been on there just nonstop helping folks.
But
I want to go visit his game world and pay the NPC Asher Khan Zelo a visit and see how much experience, and he's got more than two pieces of gold on him.
Well, that's going to be in Aurelian Knights. Oh. So in Aurelian Knights, he's got Asher Khan in there. He's
immortalized down there.
Yeah.
Which maybe I should really second think about going to go kill that NPC if he's immortal. I was lucky to get a chance to speak with Wayne Schiegel, who has won tons of awards for his works over the vault. And now I'm going to be a creative voice with a lot of voice acting roles for his upcoming Neverwinter Nights 2 module, A Hunt Through the Dark Remastered.
Well, geez, do you need any help?
Yeah. I'll go ahead and tell them all about you.
Excellent. I can talk.
Oh, Dave, have you tried playing with the Beholder that was released from the DM client with Neverwinter Nights 2?
No, I haven't yet.
It's wicked. That thing could smoke so many people with its lasers that shoot from its eyeballs, and it disintegrates them good.
Wasn't Dirtywick doing the scripting for that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I haven't played with it. I just heard tons of raves on it.
Trey and I recently attended the AME Academy of Modding Excellence's Golden Dragon Awards. They had an IRC chatting event, and it's just always amazing to have experienced group of creative folks together, just all at once, just to pick their brain.
Yeah, you were with us on the Persistent World Roundtable, and then I had to go feed the kids and stuff, so I didn't get to drop in on that, so that was fun.
Oh, yeah, so it was even more fun trying to juggle both conversations. You could find their chat logs at their AME website.
Arg, so Skunk, I really appreciate you captain in this vessel. Why don't we steer back into the harbor?
Let's make berth.
Ooh. Ew. 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 That's pretty cool.
All right, it's time for us to drop anchor here.
Get in game.
And level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word.
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geese, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast. Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2008.
Ugh.
Not that I get into the habit of pieces of mice anyway.
Ugh. You are doing fine, Japan.
Dude.
I'll do his wife. I mean, I'll.
Oh,
I'll
really?
I'll voice the giant's wife.
You realize we'll have to bleep that. So.
She's not that kind of woman.
She's wearing a pink skull cap.
Oh, baby.
What?
And some people believe that I won the award from the Cracker Jacks box, too. How do you get that? They randomly pick you out of a hat.